Hi, everybody. This is the Ramble Redhead Show, and we'd like to welcome you to today's episode. Today, we have a very special guest, and the reason why I have him on the program is because of another guest that we had on the program, and that is a gentleman by the name of Rich Merritt, and he is a very good friend of Rich, and he had referred me to John, and his name is John in Sheffield, and the reason why I wanted to get John on the show is because he does a very interesting part-time job, and we're going to be talking about that, as well as a lot more about him as a person, and as you well know about the format of the show. So what I'd like to do, without any further ado, I'd like to welcome John to the program. Hey, John, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I am great. And you are in the... well, why don't you tell us, listeners, why don't you tell us how old you are and then where you're from?
Oh, my goodness, how old I am?
Yeah.
I can't believe you asked me that.
Okay, we won't ask that question. A lady never tells his age.
I'm kidding. But I'm old. I'm like really, really old in gay years.
Oh, God.
And I came
drama,
out,
drama, drama.
Came out late, but I'm 54. I was born in 52.
Okay.
Gotta hope that's right. And I always get the comment that I look so much younger than my real age.
Well, that's good. That's what you want to hear.
Well, I've lived a very clean life.
Well, that's good. That's good. And so where were you born?
I was born in Atlanta.
Okay.
And I grew up in Atlanta.
Well, great. And do you have any brothers and sisters?
I have two half-sisters.
Okay.
And they were in high school when I was born, so...
Oh, wow. Big age difference.
Huge. They were a lot like my mother. For years, I thought my oldest sister was my mother.
Oh, wow.
And when I found out that my mom was my mom... no, I'm kidding.
Okay,
who's
folks?
That old lady? Who's that old lady over in the corner?
Yeah, what is she doing?
Mom.
It's Mommy Darius. No, just kidding. So.
And I was the last one. I was the baby. I was the only boy. And I don't know. Maybe that's a point in favor of nurture as opposed to nature.
Right.
But I was, I guess, raised as... almost an only child.
Yeah, I was going to say, because of them being so much older, they probably were in college then as you grew up. And
they were out of the house by the time I was 4 years old, and they moved, eventually out of state. And I was king of the house.
Wow. Okay, great. So, so what was your childhood like growing up in Atlanta?
It was great, as an only child, especially if you're the boy, if you're the only boy. And my mom had had, a few miscarriages before and after me. So there was this, special, you're special.
Yeah.
And, so it was not a bad childhood.
Well, that's good. So how old were you when you, realized that you were gay?
I can actually remember being vaguely attracted to, my same sex at an early age, 5.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you finally acted on it?
Well, I went off my first year to a state school, and I know that you asked that question. I guess I acted on it earlier than that. I was in the Boy Scouts, and there was a lot of experimenting around, and yet, everyone was straight.
Right.
Experimenting but straight, does that count?
Uh-huh. Sure.
Okay. Well, let's say 13, 12, 13.
Okay.
And then my first year in college at a state school, there was some experimenting around, and that's it.
Wow. Okay. So do you remember how you felt at that time once you finally had been with another, you know, male person? Did you have any of those hang-ups or feelings like, you know, like a lot of us did growing up?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, definitely. Definitely a lot of hang-ups. And there was this vague sense that, you know, well, this is just a phase. You'll get over this. You know, you'll move on. You'll get married. You'll have a family. You'll have kids.
Mm-hmm.
My first year in state school was actually a year where I had a born-again Christian experience, and
right.
I got involved in a church, and that pretty much changed, you know, the course that I took for the next 20 years of my life. And the whole gay thing was put undercover and behind me, and, you know, I spent a long time trying to be straight and trying to be what, you know, I felt like God wanted me to be. And so for 20 years there was a dry period.
So did you date women then, or do you?
Yeah, a little bit. But if you're familiar with like a Kinsey 6,
mm-hmm.
you know what that is?
Yeah, where one number you're
totally
completely
straight.
Yeah, and the other number you're completely homosexual.
Totally gay. I'm a Kinsey 6. And, I mean, just never, you know, was never remotely attracted to women. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that during the next 20 years when I was in this Christian environment, I met a lot of people who, with the gaydar,
right.
I felt like, oh my God, these guys are gay and they're married and they have kids. So, you know, God's going to eventually change me.
Mm-hmm.
And, but he never did. So,
well, did you meet men at all during that time?
Never lived, really. I mean, I never lived a double life.
Mm-hmm.
I met, you know, people.
Right.
But, I guess the kind of guy that I'm attracted to is a non-gay type of a guy.
Right.
So the gay guys that I met, I wasn't attracted to, so it really wasn't much of a temptation.
So you're saying that for 20 years you didn't date men or women, right?
I dated a few women, but as soon as they, you know, got clingy and
sexual,
and,
then you kind of stayed away.
Ran.
Oh,
nightmares.
No. Well, see, one story I have not told to any of my podcast or my audience yet is that, see, for a very, very short period of time, I had dated this woman. And the thing was is that I liked her. I mean, I don't know if I'd say loved her, but I was at the you know, the in between gay and trying to be straight. And I met this girl and we went out a lot of times. And the thing was that there's one, I will never forget the one night that she was wanting to be intimate. And I kept kind of, you know, backing off. But the thing was, as a joke, what I tell people is that what really scared me off was the fact that she wore braces. And me and Mr. Happy got scared. But so it's a bad joke. You're supposed to laugh, John.
Well, what was it about the braces that scared you?
that she had them and that she was going to do things to Mr. Happy, you know.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, that's what I meant. She was going to chop it off or something. Okay, we'll have to retape that, and then I'll edit that part where you didn't laugh, and then have the editing, and you'll be, ah! But, okay.
I was thinking maybe you had braces, and you'd get...
No, she had the braces.
Okay.
No, she had the braces.
And I think we've all been in that position where, you know, we thought, my God, this person's killing me, and they don't have braces.
Okay, well, moving right along. So after the period of time, we did date a couple women, and then so you went on for, like you said, 20 years. Then
20 years, can you believe that?
Wow. So how old were you then when you started acting on being with guys?
Well, I guess I should say after I had the born again, you know, religious experience, my first year in a state school, I transferred. Mm-hmm. Became involved in a church that was highly connected, closely connected to Bob Jones University. And so the next year I transferred to Bob Jones.
Oh, wow.
And which is like the most conservative Christian school in the country.
Yes.
You've either heard of it or you haven't. And the people that I find that have heard of it go, oh my. The
yes.
easiest way to explain it is they're kind of like the Taliban of Christianity.
Wow.
When I was there, they embraced the term fundamentalist.
Right.
Which I've heard that recently they've tried to get away from because of the Islamic fundamentalist connection, but they mm-hmm. were very, very proud of the fact that they were separatist and they were the most conservative, which means they loved God the most and us four no more. There was a kind of a little underground joke among the students. On their crest, it says "Petimus Credimus," which is Latin for, do you know?
Mm-mm.
We seek, we serve. But the joke was that it stood for, we're right, you're wrong.
Now, is that how you met Rich then?
Well, we met Rich. I was working for a camp and conference center. I had actually gotten a job on the staff as a gospel singer.
Oh.
So I traveled for the camp in a quartet and as their featured soloist. And it's not really connected with Bob Jones, but it's close to the school. And he was a summer worker there, and we became friends. And, you know, if you read Rich's book, you realize he eventually went one direction, and actually almost we came out about the same time.
Did you have any idea that he was gay at that time?
Not really. I mean, we were good friends. When I knew him before I came out, no, I didn't. But after I came out, isn't this funny? After I came out, I thought, you think about all these people that you met.
Right.
All of a sudden, you know, a light bulb goes off and you realize maybe they were gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same thing happened to Rich. He's got a story where when he got out of the military, he was in the in San Diego and he joined the gay men's chorus. And the night before they had their first concert, he says that he had a dream that I was at the concert sitting on the front row.
Wow.
And after that, he tried to get in touch with me, but couldn't, was unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm.
And and then really didn't try it, you know, after that. But he thought, gosh, I think maybe John's gay.
Mm-hmm.
So after I came out, I remember thinking that Rich, I wonder if Rich was gay.
Wow, that's really kind of ironic.
Never really tried to get in touch with him. And then one day I was reading a local publication and saw his book and saw the name, and I thought, well, no, it couldn't be the same. Couldn't be the same Rich Merritt. And when I read, you know, what the book was about, I went, oh, my God.
It is.
And, you know, found him, found his website, and we reconnected.
Wow. Okay, cool. I didn't realize that's how you guys got back. So that's thank you for that story. That's really cool.
And I've actually, some of my best friends that I have today are people who knew me when I was singing in a gospel quartet,
mm-hmm.
and then we ended up running into each other, you know, in a gay bar years later.
Yeah.
Probably one of the most unusual things that's ever been spoken in a gay bar was years ago, right after, I'd been out about 3 years, and I'm out in one of the local bars in Atlanta, and this guy comes up to me and says, oh, my God, you're John Sheffield. You led me to the Lord when I was a senior in high school.
Wait, say that again?
He said, oh, my God, you're John Sheffield. You led me to the Lord when I was a senior in high school. And
okay.
I said, well, I guess you don't hear that a lot in a gay bar.
No, you don't.
And, you know, he's one of my best friends that I have today. I have a lot of friends that I've run into who knew me from traveling and singing. And I guess when you have that background, you almost have an instant connection with the person.
That's amazing. So as far as when you said you actually came out then, so how old were you then when that happened?
I was 39.
39, okay. And then can you remember the first person you came out?
Yeah, it was the first night I came out. I had actually left the whole gospel singing thing, and my parents were obviously, as we mentioned, you know, there were two daughters that were, gosh, you know, 17, 18 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came out, my parents were a lot older, and their health was failing. So at that point in my life, I thought, you know, gosh, I'm not anywhere closer to being straight than I was when I started years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to move on with my life and you know, find out what this whole gay thing is. I guess I should back up. Can I back up?
Sure.
When I first got involved in the whole Christian movement and singing, the storyline was, you know, if you're gay, God will change you. You know, if you're homosexual, you just, you know, pray and believe and God will change you.
Right.
And I had done this for years, and I wasn't anywhere even close to being straight. I had met a lot of people in my travels. A number of them were, oddly enough, song directors in churches across the country.
Right.
Who I thought, oh my God, there's another gay one. There's another gay one. And he's married and he's got a family. So eventually God will change me and I'll get married and I'll have a family and everything will be okay. But being a Kinsey Six, you know, it just, it wasn't happening and it wasn't going to happen. And I got to the point to where I felt like I've got to move on with my life and, you know, be honest, because during this whole time I'd never told anyone I was gay. And that was the biggest thing that bothered me about being gay, was that in a Christian environment I couldn't be honest.
Right.
And, you know, and the proverbial, I'm just living a lie. even though I wasn't acting on it, I felt bad that I couldn't express, you know, that this was a problem in life. And in the Christian community, you know, you can be a drug addict, you can be an alcoholic, and you can get up and give your testimony, and, you know, you're admired for overcoming this. But
right.
You can't get up and say, oh, I was just the big old queen, and God delivered me.
Right.
You know, that, I mean, you're ostracized and you're marked. And being a gospel singer, had I come out and done that, I would have lost my job, even though I wasn't practicing, even though I was being honest, I would have lost my job.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first became a Christian, the story that I heard over and over again was from preachers was, if you know, if you're a drug addict, God'll change you. If you're an alcoholic, God'll change you. If you've fallen into sin, if you're a homosexual, God'll change you. That was what they were saying when I first became involved in the Christian community. And toward the end of my stint, my gig, whatever you want to call it, they changed their views. And they actually began coming out and saying, well, if you're gay, if you're a homosexual, if you're a sodomite, you're always going to have to struggle with this. And that just didn't make sense to me. If it was a sin.
Right.
If it was a sin, if God would completely change the alcoholic, if God would completely change the drug addict and the whore, then why wouldn't he change me? Why am I the exception?
Right.
Why am I going to have to struggle with this the rest of my life? And the party line, as I would put it, changed. And all of a sudden I started hearing sermons where it said, you know, the preacher was saying, this is something, you know, the homosexual lifestyle is something that if a person is involved in that, if that's their weakness, if that's their sin, then it will always be a struggle with them. And I don't know, it was like a light bulb went off in my head, and I said, well, if God isn't going to change me, then it's not a sin.
Right.
And I'd spent 20 years trying to get God to do that. I mean, you know, for God's sake, how long does it take him?
Yeah.
it's not like, you know, you're calling Comcast to try to get through and have your service fixed, and they put you on hold for 5 hours. You know, okay, did God put me on hold for the last 20 years? And all of a sudden, you know, they give you the same line they do when you're on Comcast. Well, I don't know what the problem is, but, you know, we'll send somebody out, and you know they're going to send somebody out, and you know they're not going to fix the problem.
Right.
I just didn't feel like, well, that's not the way God works.
Right.
If it was a sin and God wanted me changed, he'd have changed me a long time ago, and I need to move on with my life. So my parents were in failing health, and that was the motivating factor that made it easy for me to leave that life behind. I felt like as a Christian, it was my responsibility to come home and take care of my parents. And they both passed away, and I was able to do that and handle that responsibility. And it's odd, when I left, the reason that I gave them, you know, for leaving was my parents are, you know, need my help. I need to go take care of them. I'm the only one, you know, that's, both my sisters had families and were out of state. And so it fell my lot to do that. And I thought that was an honorable thing. And I actually got the response that I got from a number of the leaders in the Christian community was, you know what, you need to do God's work, and God will take care of your parents. And wow. I thought, well, that's just the most unchristian thing I've ever heard of in my life.
So they wanted you not to help your parents?
Oh, yeah. There was. It's funny. A number of people gave me that response when I left.
Wow. Well, that's sad.
And there were a number of people, I should say, that wrote me letters and said, you know, I feel like, you know, what you're doing is right. Don't listen to the critics. You're doing the right thing. But there were a lot of, big name leaders who said, you know, God is using you in what you're doing. And the Bible says, if you're not willing to leave father and mother for the kingdom of heaven's sake, then you're not worthy of the kingdom of heaven. And so that means that. And they've always got a verse to back up what they want, you know, you to do. I call it the pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
The pick and choose theology. You can find any verse you can pick and choose to support whatever you want to support.
Right.
And I mean, for God's sake, common sense. Take care of your parents.
Yeah, no kidding.
And so, I don't know. That was almost like a nail in the coffin when I left and I got that response. And that criticism, you know, I wasn't leaving to be gay. I was leaving to take care of my parents. And they're criticizing me and condemning me for that.
Wow.
What are they going? What would they have done had I, you know, left and, you know, said, well, you know, I'm just a big old queen.
yeah.
And it made it, at that point, it made it very, very easy for me to come out. And
so who was the first person? So I'm sorry. Well, I
moved to Atlanta.
Right.
I was too nervous to go out to a bar in Atlanta. So, I took a couple of weeks off, drove down to Florida because I knew no one would know me in Florida. And the first city that I went to was Daytona. And I'd heard, you know, gay bars in every big city.
Mm-hmm.
I looked in the Yellow Pages for a bar that sounded gay. And I picked out a bar, and I don't remember the name of it, but I thought, that sounds like a gay bar. And I called the bar about 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon, evening, and disguised my voice because I knew that they would recognize me if I used my regular voice. I did this. It's so insane. And I said, just like this, I can hear it just like I was saying it, you know, yesterday. Is this a gay bar? I was crazy. It's insane. But
and they answer the phone. No, I'm sorry. This is a meeting. No, just kidding. So what did they say?
They said no. And I said, well, are there any gay bars in Daytona? And they knew the gay bar in Daytona, and they gave me the name, and then I called them and found out where they were, drove to the bar, drove around for an hour before I got enough courage to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I was there way too early.
Right.
You know, for the crowd. When I went in, there were probably 10 people in the whole bar. And was sitting there, and someone came up and started talking, and it was like I couldn't wait to say it because I had never said it. I was 39 years old, and I had never said this to anyone in my entire life. And after we got through our little introductions, I said, this is my first time in a gay bar, and I'm gay.
Wow. So and how did you feel when you did that?
I felt exactly the same way I felt when I prayed and asked God to save me 20 years earlier.
Wow.
It was like a burden had been lifted off my shoulders. It was like I had become born again.
Wow.
It was the most... You know, it was truly a religious experience. But as a Christian, I felt like, why can't I tell the truth?
Yeah.
And I had, it was, you know, I was telling the truth to somebody for the first time. And, that night was a disaster. But,
well, why was it a disaster?
Oh, gosh, I just look back and just...
shake your head?
Think, yeah, we met this guy, and, you know, we went back to my hotel room. 5 minutes later, I'm done. And he's just like, oh, my God. And he said, well, let's go back to the bar. And I said, okay, I'm ready. And when we got back, the late night crowd was beginning to, you know, filter in. And I went up to the disc jockey, the guy that was playing the music. And I wanted to request a song because they were doing all of this dance stuff that I was
right.
not real familiar with. And, I wanted a gay song. It was my first night out in the gay bar, and I wanted a gay song. So I went up and requested a gay song, and I asked him, I said, have you got anything by Barbara Streisand? And he said, no. And I thought, well, I thought this was a gay bar.
And what year was this again? What year?
This would have been 91.
91, yeah.
And he played, I can't even remember what he played, but it was a little bit slower, and I got to semi-slow dance with this guy that I'd met. And then we met another guy and went back to his place, and I actually saw, you know, the act, you know, for the first time in my life.
Right. You saw the act? You didn't participate?
No.
I
was so scared that I was going to, you know, catch something.
Wow.
And
So the three of you went back to the place?
Yes.
Okay.
My first night out. We're having a, you know, kind of a three-way. And...
Welcome to the world.
I know. And then he wanted to, you know, they were wanting to have unsafe sex. And
oh, yeah.
I had been in a Christian environment for 20 years, but I wasn't stupid.
Exactly. Amen, brother.
And, you know, actually watched them, you know, have unsafe sex. And I thought, my God. What have I gotten myself into?
wow.
And so that was my first night out.
Wow.
Came back to Atlanta and slowly started going out and getting my nerve to up enough to go into other bars. And I was scared because I thought, well, you know, I'm going to go out and someone's going to recognize me.
Right.
And... sure enough, when I started going out, I started meeting people who knew me, and, you know, it wasn't a horrible thing. And I actually was out one night in a bar here in Atlanta, and someone saw me who knew me from the gospel singing thing.
Right.
And he was with a friend of his, and he said, "Oh, my God, that's John Sheffield." And he said, "What's the big deal?" And he said, "Well, you don't understand. He's just like this big gospel singer." And the guy said, "Well, he's obviously gay, too." And he said, no, he's not gay. He's here trying to win people to the Lord. And he knows me, and he can't see me. And so he didn't come up and meet me that night.
Wow.
And because he was absolutely sure that I was not gay, that I was there on some sort of mission. And I
with a cocktail in your hand.
I was actually there, yeah, in a cut-off white T-shirt and Daisy Duke shorts, and, you know. that was the uniform of the day.
Yeah.
And the second time... he was out and saw me there. His friend actually came up and said, "I've got someone for you to meet," and he dragged me over. And and you know, we're friends today. And and that's it. Next question.
Okay, well, what I'm going to do, John, is because we're over the little over 30-minute mark already. So what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and take a quick pause here, and we'll continue with part two in just a second. But what I'd like to do is thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Ramble Redhead Show. We'd like to hear your comments. You can go to my website, which is RambleRedhead RambleRedhead.com, and you can also go to my email, which is RambleRedhead@gmail.com. And also I want you to... leave a comment on my comment line, which is 574-203-4263, and I'll be giving the information about John and his website and all that in just a second, because we haven't revealed yet what that is. So just hold on 1 second, and thank you for listening to the Ramble Redhead Show. Just...